Welcome to Dr. Brass Stacks. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Yeah, my issue about dentistry is a little bit of a different spin.
Mm-hmm.
I went to a dental office and I asked for the price of a filling, and I was given a particular price. So I would have walked with the money that I would have had to pay for the filling. So anyway, I got there, I filled out the form, everything. When I got into the office, I had the filling done, and I don't want to give you too much details until they come to the end. I had the filling done, and when I came out of the office, the lady gave me a cheaper price than what I was told initially. So I was very excited, and I thought, oh, I had been given a bargain, you know. And when I came home and I looked into the mirror, I realized I had a black filling as opposed to the white filling. And, you know, everybody, I think, in this modern time would more be going with the white filling because it's more aesthetic, you know. And, of course, I don't know about you, but I don't know if you've heard that these black fillings are associated with mercury and are linked to depression, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I did call back, and the doctor, or the dentist, I should say, she said to me, the black fillings are better than the white. Now, I'm thinking, if I go to a dentist, shouldn't she tell me that you have the option of a black filling or a white filling? These are their prices, but according to her, if she is suggesting that the black filling is better, tell me from her professional standpoint why she thinks the black filling is better, and then give me the option as the client or the patient what I should choose. I would love to hear from the gentleman there what he thinks about that scenario, because I was very upset. She said I could come back and get the filling done over, but I wasn't too keen on doing that, so I still have the black filling in my mouth.
All right, I really appreciate your call. I would say, let me say a couple things first of all.
Mm-hmm.
So the black filling that you're talking about, or the silver fillings that we used to
yes,
call them,
please.
The amalgam filling.
Yes, please.
Let me dispel a couple myths about them first of all.
Mm-hmm.
They do not, under any circumstances, cause any trouble for anyone. Truthfully, unless you are super hypersensitive, which may be one out of a billion, and there are probably only 7.5 people in the world that would be affected by it, they are far better filling. The industry did move towards white filling, but that was consumer-driven, where they wanted a more aesthetic approach.
Correct.
White fillings, especially back then, white fillings in the old days, did not last anywhere as long as a silver filling.
Mm-hmm.
They were more prone to leakage.
Mm-hmm.
But there was that group of people that got out there and created a myth, basically, that these silver fillings were horrible. The worst thing about a silver filling, really and truly, is when you go to remove it and you create that aerosol that creates a mercury vapor. So all of those people that marched in to get their silver fillings changed out to white
mm-hmm.
fillings, they actually created an issue for themselves in creating that vapor.
Mm-hmm.
In the old days, you would have that filling for 20, 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
It would crack one day, fall out in two pieces. And you go
the,
to your
the mercury
dentist
or the white one? Which one?
The mercury filling, ma'am.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the white filling is a resin filling. It is more aesthetic, but it wears down faster. So certainly, if it's
so, when you say faster, are you talking months, years?
Years. So a silver filling would originally last 10 to 30, 40, 50 years.
Mm-hmm.
A white filling ideally was engineered originally to last 3 to 5 years. Now they probably last more like 10 years.
Right.
But they do wear down faster. So certainly if it's in the back of your mouth,
mm-hmm.
it is far better to get a silver filling.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly nowadays, though, where the materials are, the white fillings or the tooth-colored fillings are a far better quality than it used to be 20 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are a lot safer to use in a posterior.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I agree with you. I would rather that your dentist would have had that conversation that we are having now so that you would have been fully informed and you would have made a decision. But there was, I would applaud the dentist in not charging you for a white filling when in fact you didn't need a white filling. But I do wish that you had had that conversation about choice because there
yeah.
was a choice.
Yeah. But I know you're saying that, people that you were suggesting, I mean, I don't know how much research you would have done, and they probably would not have done as much as you did, but I'm reading about mercury and the amount in a certain amount of solution how dangerous it can be. And while you're saying that, warning how many people can, you know, be affected by mercury, you never know. I may be, and when I say I, me, or somebody else, I just might be that person may be affected by the...
Yes, you're absolutely right. Buddy, I would say to you, all of the regulatory bodies have done the research. If you go online and you check the WHO, check any of the major research organizations.
But it's worth researching.
Absolutely. There is absolutely no issue with the silver filling.
Mm-hmm.
There are risks in everything. There's a risk when you get knocked out to get a surgery, and you need to weigh that risk.
Mm-hmm.
But there's really very minimal risk in getting a silver filling put in, quite honestly. Certainly, our society has moved to aesthetics. But there's an increased cost of that. A silver filling.
But it wasn't that much more. I had already been told. And I mean, I don't want to drag out this conversation, but
certainly.
I had already been told by the dentist's office how much I would have had to pay. And there is
right.
a walk in there expecting to come home with this type of filling. And then when I come home, I see another color. You know, and like I said, I would have preferred the aesthetic one, but I do appreciate, like you said, she should have given me the option. She should
Absolutely.
Have educated me and say, well, okay, even if she's going to give me the black one for such and such a reason, I think this is the choice you should make. But what I want to ask you, if this one is better, technically, how comes it's cheaper than the white one?
It has been around for centuries. Again, it's consumer-driven. If you want anything that looks good, the manufacturer is going to charge far more than they charge for the other one. And that's the reality of our society.
Okay, that's a kind of a catch-22 position. Interesting.
Yeah,
all right, sir, I mean,
you
know.
Well, thank you very much.
Certainly, ma'am. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dr. Brastacks, hello.
Mr. Ellis?
Yes.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
This thing, really, it is two things. The dentist business... And the weekend mention in page 24 book, this parliamentary conversation or written statement. But anyway, I'm going to start with the dentist first. This is about now a month that I have had oral surgery. I had the x-ray. I was told how much it was going to cost. And then she looked in my examined my mouth. I had to have oral surgery. When she did all that she had to do, and she told me the first two teeth was out, I was shocked. When she finished the other two, it was unbelievable. Her bedside manner and her staff and her office is second to none. And I was waiting for the exorbitant price. Nothing so fresh. And next thing you know, the Thursday, I had all of that done in her office. I come home, and in the afternoon, I got a call from the secretary to come tomorrow morning to fit my dentures. Tomorrow morning was the Friday. And from then to this moment, as I'm sitting here, I am quite satisfied. And the price? When I carry out a certain amount of money, thinking that I'm going to go out to pay all of this money, it wasn't even half of that. And a proper job, proper hygiene. These people are jokers. I'm not saying that they shouldn't be paid for what they went out and learned to do. This dentist is, I'm 5'4", and she ain't even as tall as me. Excellent service and a job well done. Next thing now is about, I would like somebody that is more educated than me to explain to me what it is about this getting, you're building repair and you got to move out and you got to get this certification and you got to get the next certification and then when it's finished, then you got to get certification for you to move.
Well, this
back
matter
here.
Came up last Friday, you know.
Well, I didn't hear it. I read it.
We had Minister Cattle here on the air, and she said that aspect of it is being postponed. They are getting comments from the public, and you know, there's been feedback that has been quite negative about it. But she also indicated that there were special circumstances where that would be required. If you were doing a major expansion, knocking down walls and that sort of thing.
But that's something different.
That's what she explained.
But you come out to talk about somebody getting, like we grow and the houses getting repaired and you live in it. And it finished.
Yes.
Carpenters come and do what they got to do and all of that sort of thing. You got to look for money now to go to rent someplace.
Right. And she said that basically that is not the intent. She said that is not the ma'am. She said that is not the intent. No. Remember the way it was worded has left everybody who knows how we have done things traditionally fuming about any idea that the average person who is making minor adjustments to their home would have to find some place to live in the period that repairs are being carried out on the premises. She's indicated that that is not the plan, and she's asked to come back with officials of the ministry, relevant ministry, to perhaps expand on this. We are willing to have them back as soon as possible. But you should not, based upon what she said, you should not have a worry about that at this stage, okay?
But these people better think. We were taught in school, think before you speak and look before you leap.
Fair enough.
Another thing, too. Mm-hmm. I was born in this country, my birthplace, years and years ago. I am retired, I'm widowed. And I see up to now St. Thomas, St. Andrew, St. John, St. Joseph, St. Philip, can't get water up to now. We had to go out the standpipe and bring water. My aunt and those people used to go down to Pori Spring, there the spring, and wash the clothes. And now these people paying these exorbitant bills for water and can't get water up to now. Give me a break and talking about moving Nelson and all of that junk. You know what we'd like to see in Broad Street? You ever hear about the first female prison superintendent or what the people call her? Have you ever heard of her?
Who is? Give me the name.
Her name is Gloria Broom.
Yeah, I've heard the name.
Right. She is the first female superintendent of prisons that we have had in this country. If somebody could correct me if I'm wrong. We never had a prison break in her time. We never had a prison fire in her time.
Yeah, but she wasn't. Was she in charge of the?
Yes, she was in charge.
The whole thing.
Yes, sir. She was Gloria Broom. If you don't meet Dane, you could check the records.
Well, I can't remember.
But that's what we'd like to see. I would like to see a statue of her when they're coming up Broad Street or coming down Broad Street in that uniform. Gloria Broom, simple person, and those prisoners that was in her charge respect her when she is walking by herself to this very day. She get the women educated in more than one way, and so are
she was in charge. Wasn't she in charge of the female wing?
She was in charge of, as far as I know, she was in charge of the whole prison.
Okay, well, let me check on that.
Check it for me and see if I'm wrong.
I don't remember that aspect of
she was in charge of Glendary.
Okay.
I know good what I'm talking about. Well, if I'm wrong, I'm speaking under correction, okay?
Okay, no problem.
Those are the three things that I want to talk about. And I hope that something be done to these people that is seeing hell to get water.
Well, I want to thank you very much. And I'm really impressed today because you have a number of people who don't normally call the program who have decided that, you know, they have to have a say. And that is to be encouraged. The first-timers and the women in particular who are normally drowned out by some of the regular people who have kindly given way to you all today. I thank you all so much. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Yes, so I've confirmed that Gloria Broom was superintendent of the prison. I suppose one of the reasons why I can't remember that is because it didn't go on for too long. It was a relatively short tenure, but she did actually rise to the level of being superintendent of prisons. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Good afternoon. Welcome to the program.
Yes, I'm calling to talk about the dentist. The dentist are Dr. Armagon has said have a lot of expense. It is terribly when you speak to them or hear from them how expensive a dental chair is. And then when it comes into Barbados, sometimes the price doubles from $20,000 to $40,000. And a dentist has, when you see the things that a dentist use, in, like they may have a tray with certain things on it, and if you ask them the price, your jaw will drop. Because the price is so expensive, and the things are sometimes smaller than your small finger. So it is really expensive for them. It is real hardship for the dentist. Now, the government needs to look into some of that. I know the dentists have some, I know the government has some help at the polyclinic, you know, where you can take children. And sometimes the parents tell you straight, I carry no child in a polyclinic. I'm not going there. And adults too can get some help at the polyclinic in a free way. And sometimes they don't want to take it. They have to be of a certain age, I believe. And so I'm hoping, as Dr. Armagon has said, I'm hoping that the government will try to help the dentist. If you can take away some of the duties and the expense, then life will be different. But what I would say is that the doctors have it a little easier because a bed doesn't cost what a dental chair costs. And then when you bring in some technicians to set up the dental chair, it is tons of money you are looking for to pay again. Talk to some of the dentists and you will understand. But with the doctors, an ultrasound costs a lot of money. X-rays can cost a lot of money when you go to FMH or any of those. CAT scans can cost a lot of money. And they have a lot of different examinations that cost a lot of money. So I'm asking, please, don't come down hard on the dentists. The dentists are smelly hell, and they need some help with finding things that they can get in a cheaper way in order to do their business. So I'm asking, you know, to be a little more caring.
All right,
because
ma'am.
Prices in the medical service, really expensive as well.
All right, ma'am. Thank you very much. With Dr. Armagon, I'm going to take a comment from you and
certainly
we'll let you go as we
certainly
go into the
thank
last
you,
stages of today's program. Yes.
All right. So, as I said, I mean, look, we in the dental community are more than open to discussion. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, we're here to serve the public. That is the path we have chosen. There are many things that contribute to the cost of dental treatment. A lot of those, unfortunately, are beyond our control. We've talked about education. We've talked about equipment and materials, import duties, transport, storage, utilities. So everything in Barbados costs us far more than it does these to provide the same service that we're doing. I do think, quite honestly, that the fees in Barbados are good. I don't think they're bad. I think they're excellent, actually. I would ask that we can get a fee guide. I think that would help the public to see from a transparent point of view. Whether you shop at a popular supermarket or another supermarket, you will pay extra because of the services that are going with that. But if you had an understanding of what those fees should be, a medium of what our fee should be to get a certain procedure done, I think that would help you in understanding, am I prepared to pay the higher rate, or do I accept a lower service, perhaps a different office, whatever version of that. And that's where competition comes in. The more competition we have, the more we will have services available in all tiers to meet whatever.
Okay.
I applaud the dental community at this point for what they have done during this COVID crisis. I think they've been extremely brave. A lot of them are facing financial crises that you or I may not understand. But in locking down, they did what was the right thing.
You feel
for
that
country.
Some of them will go out of practice because
I
of
do.
That?
I know for sure they will. I guarantee you that there are a couple of dentists that you will not see reopening, or they'll reopen shortly and they'll have to quit and join another practice as an associate. But I can guarantee you it's going to happen, as I believe it will in many sectors of our society and around the world. I don't think that's something that we're immune to in Barbados.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Dr. Vijay Armagon of the Dental Association, for responding so promptly to the complaints that were made earlier on today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. Thank you. Another topical issue in Barbados before we close the program at 2 o'clock has to do with the comments which have been made by Anthony Wood. Now, some time ago when Mr. Wood made his comments in the newspaper, put out his ad, the first reaction that we got from the Barbados Labour Party, one of the senior members of the party, was that his comments were not a criticism of the BLP, but a criticism of Mr. Weir, and that it basically came across as though it was just a personality matter. The comments that we saw from Mr. Wood over the weekend suggest that it is much deeper than that. And if you look at the back of the paper today, you will see comments coming from two political scientists to the effect that it is of no significance. I beg to differ. I do not believe that you can, at this stage of the game, write off the comments which have been made. I agree that it is absolutely necessary for him to spell out in greater detail exactly what are the issues that trouble them. And it is on the basis of spelling those issues out that you can then determine whether his position is one that could hurt the party or not. But without hearing these comments, for me, it's premature to actually come to the conclusion that his position is of no significance. Of course, I agree that he is really putting himself in a position where the machinery of the party itself is likely to come after him. But his central issue seems to be that there were some time-bound promises which the Barbados Labour Party made to the public of Barbados, that it has not kept those promises within the time frame. And central to all of it is the concern about anti-corruption legislation. It feels obviously that that has taken too long. My sense of all of this is that there is more in this mortar than the pestle. And the Labour Party has long had a capacity to be able to, you know, to bury a lot of its difficulties and stop things from being aired in public. This one has gone pretty far. And under the leadership of Mia Motley, it raises the question of why is it that this matter was not contained, and to what extent this is not just a fight within Darweir. This may well be a much bigger dissatisfaction with the running of the Labour Party government. So I have to sit down here and wait to see where it has gone. The comments that were made by the members of the public, as featured in the newspaper, to my mind, hit the nail on the head. They were far more cautious. And they said, you know, let me wait and see what this man got to say first. All right? But to me, I will wait to hear and to see how he is able to, first of all, mobilize public opinion, because he is not just, to me, coming across as though it's a man who, sorry that somebody else has gone into his seat and that sort of thing. He's basically saying, look, I went out there and I campaigned on certain issues, and I am disappointed that the Barbados Labour Party has not followed up on these particular issues. And let me tell you, if you listen to what people are saying right now on the ground, there is a sense that they're kind of dissatisfied with the fact that the Labour Party leadership went out there and knocked people like Mark Maloney and talked about the distribution of wealth in this country. And when they look at the newspaper and that sort of thing, it is like, wait, the same people that they criticize so heavily, look what they're doing for them. Look how closely they're working with them. On the other hand, what are they doing for the other people that were given a promise that they would get more? That is captured in the man's comment. The more things change, the more they remain the same. Anybody who wants to dismiss that certainly will do so, in my judgment, in the context of missing the real message that is coming through here. I think there's more to this than meets the eye, and I respectfully disagree with the assessment that has come from the two political scientists. I think it's premature, and there is more in this. There's more to come. This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello, Down to Brass Tacks.
Yes. Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Hi, good afternoon.
How are you doing?
I'm okay.
Well, I really wasn't wired to talk about the situation in St. Philip South. I was more concerned about what was going to happen when the CCJ make their announcement.
On Wednesday.
Regarding the situation, I think that is going to have a lot of implications for what is going on in Barbados, I mean in the Caribbean, as a matter of fact.
Why?
Because however they come down, they're going to be offending a section of the Guyanese people. And given the fact, too, that there was some protests by the Granger supporters this morning in Guyana,
yes,
where they were asking for people to stay out of their business and that kind of thing. You know, so
people
I
like who? You mean the court? You can imagine that's all. That's the timing of that is all about the court's decision.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting, and I don't know. I just await the outcome and see how it plays out, because there's
charged. You know, this is a charged atmosphere. And anytime you comment on this particular matter, there are Guyanese, one way or the next, ready to attack you. You know, the idea of saying, look, you want to see justice done, that you want to ensure that the vote goes to who got the majority and that nothing else happens, then I get all sorts of discussion about, you know, the history. And who got a reputation for stealing votes and all of that, and they're ready to tear it to shreds. And
the situation is that, you know, over the years, one would have thought that it would have been a race issue, but when you really look at the parties, each party has as many other ethnic groupings as the other one. And therefore, you don't know, you really don't know what's going on in Guyana. Guyana is at this moment very complex in terms of, you know, how the social structure is made up. But another thing, too, I think that I'm concerned about what is happening throughout the Caribbean, though, Mr. Ellis. As I always say, I'm not a person who believes in formal regionalism. I believe in taking up your Georgie bundle and going wherever you want to go, as long as you obey the people's immigration rules and regulations. Because how you're looking at LIAT, you're looking at the situation in Antigua. There's conflict between Antigua, St. Lucia, Dominica. Everybody seems to be pulling and tugging in different directions. Now, how can that be for the good of regionalism, in terms of having a treaty to govern what you're doing, when everybody is doing, or seem to be doing as they please? Why is it that Jamaica, Trinidad, and Antigua and Grenada, who say they have to depend on a referendum, why is it that Grenada, if its majority or right, cannot say, look, we are going to change the constitution to be part of the CCJ? Why is it that Jamaica is always running to a referendum? You know, why can't they change their constitution? So the whole thing about the Caribbean as an entity going forward as a unit, in my opinion, would always encounter, you know, some rough seas, because nobody seems to want to come together, you know, for the good of the entire country, region.
Are you sure that you can look at it only from that angle? Because, as I said, if you listen to some of the comments which were made last week, I think the Barbados Prime Minister identified a number of areas that have been successful as well. And sometimes when we look at CARICOM, we only look at the bad news, but there's good news too.
Yeah, I don't doubt there's good news, but truthfully, Mr. Ellis, these are what you want to call bread and butter issues that where you have to have common, you have to have a consensus on. You cannot have the wrangling, you know, where everybody's opting out. Antigua doesn't want to be part of a free movement thing, because they feel that their population is too small. Saint Kitts the same thing, you know. So
but Antigua didn't argue that. Antigua argued that it had gone quite some distance in accommodating people from across the region already.
And but there were some things that there were the terms of the new list of people, free movement of people.
Yes, but they did say and point out that they have done quite a lot, and that's why they asked for to be able to be relieved of having to do that at the time. And I think the other members of the Caribbean community agreed with their assessment at
fair
the time.
Enough, fair enough. Yeah, but then we have another thing of crime in the Caribbean now, because in Jamaica now there's all this kind of crime up there. Trinidad is in a mess when it comes to crime. The president, the chief cop, he's being threatened, you know, his life and that kind of stuff. So where is the Caribbean going?
But may I ask you this question? Maybe go back to the CARIFTA and all of that. Haven't we always had challenges? Haven't we been able to make progress, notwithstanding the challenges? And we talk about things like having the University of the West Indies, having CXC as a successful model, looking at what has happened with the emergence of what is now CARFA. But before it was CARFA, we also had an organization dealing with that. We have SEDIMA that works in situations such as what happened in Dominica the other day, and the Bahamas as well. We are not all about failure when it comes to functional cooperation in the region. But in every grouping, there are tensions. I mean, the European Union has found itself now with Britain out of it. And I recently heard, I think it was the Germans, saying that COVID-19 is stretching them to the limit as a unit.
Well, that underlines what I might be projecting myself ahead, but that really underscores really what I'm talking about. That when you are a unit, if you do not really build a solid foundation to counter possibilities, future possibilities, you're going to start running for your own cover. You know, because Britain came out of the EU because they felt that it was impinging on their sovereignty. So, I mean, it's a situation where I think that each country in the Caribbean really, I feel that they should concentrate on excellence. And if you can concentrate on excellence, sometimes you don't have to be in any trade agreement with anybody. You do something well, and if I want your product, I will bet based on the quality of it. But when you have yourself subjected to concessions and treaties, you know, the concession, the whole the European people felt that they needed to give us concessions because they exploit our sugar industry, and now they left us high and dry. You know, I mean, we have to be able to, especially Barbados, we have to really start thinking of how we can can deal with producing an excellent product.
Part of the problem, sir, is that since 2008, after the financial crisis, instead of being more collaborative within the region, I got the impression that we became more insular.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the head time for us to work together. Now, okay. I sense that since Prime Minister Motley came to office, there has been a bit, the tone has changed. There has been a bit more energy because it seemed as though people just gave up. And in this period, the last 2 years, there has been more of a thrust towards regionalism. There seems to have been a closer working relationship among most of the CARICOM heads. The first real fissure in that has been this situation here with Antigua and Liat. But, you know, these things...
I'm going to leave that. I'm going to leave that to the future in terms of how effective our Prime Minister's energy would translate into the mm-hmm. good for the entire region. But Mr. Ellis, before I go, mm-hmm. you had the dentist there, and he was speaking about a matter where Donville Innes seemed to be. This is how he got it. If I'm wrong, you can tell me that he was saying, giving me the impression that Donville Innes wanted to bring in people who were sub-trained, you know, to practice.
They're coming from a school that wasn't accredited at the time. That's
right.
What he said.
Right. And I left with the impression that he was not happy with that. But I went to the GIS archives, and what Donville Innes was talking about, he really was not in any way trying to bring in Johnny Every and Winnie All into practice dentistry in Barbados. But he was saying that Barbados had spent $150,000 per student to pursue the course, the dentistry at the UE.
And then couldn't practice.
So yeah. Donville Innes was trying to look for possibilities so that these people who were trained in Trinidad would still be able to practice, but they would have to still go through examinations and registrations that would have fit the criteria that would suit the practice of Barbados. So I felt a little uneasy that the gentleman was trying to leave an impression that Donville Innes was going to the Parliament to do something, which he was going to the Parliament to allow such graduates to practice in their field in Barbados. But he, however, explained that they would have to present a certificate of good standing from the appropriate body in Trinidad, or they would have to register if they wanted to practice dentistry in Barbados.
Okay. I've got to go, though.
Okay.
Thank you very much for calling. Down to Brass Tacks. Hello.
Hi, good afternoon, Mr. Ellis. How are you?
I am well.
Are you coming back on Friday?
Most likely.
And who you got lined up for the balance of the week?
Oh, let's deal with that when it comes. You will hear. What's that got to do with today?
Well, I got to be able to plan my week too, you know, Mr. Ellis.
Look, you have an issue to discuss with me today.
Yeah, well, let me take a look at the other day I talked with you about the roads, and I told you that now that we're paying four times the road tax, you should be driving on nylon roads. Since then, the Minister of Transport and Roads say he can fix up some roads, and he's starting with Highway 1 and Highway 7. You aware of that?
Look, I live here just like you.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen a lot of road improvement in Barbados in recent times. That doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that there isn't more work to be done. But there has been a significant improvement, and I don't need to travel on nylon roads because I don't know how nylon roads would stand up to the rigors of the trucks and the cars on this island. What is your point, though?
Well, I'm going to get to that now.
No, you need to get to it.
I just want to know if you was aware or not.
Get to the point.
Tell me yes, you are aware.
Get to the point.
Right. Now, Highway 1 is crying out for the lane of pipes for water, and it also is crying out of the lane of pipes for sewage. So don't tell me that the minister is coming to repair these roads, to put down the nylon that we're paying for, then to come back in a short time to break them up to do these things.
Okay, fair enough.
Highway 7, the same thing. It's crying out for water pipes, and it also crying out for...
So your main point is don't put the cart before the horse. If you're going to do the roads, you got to deal with the...
Deal with the infrastructure first.
Infrastructure first, fair enough.
Because the other day, they come and do some half-bit roads, no slip a drain or nothing, and you was praising them for it. But let me tell you, for paying the road tax that we're paying, we want proper roads.
All right, sir. Thank you very much. Dr. Brass Stocks.
Yeah, good afternoon. I just want to ask publicly a question to Sir Hillary and the Prime Minister. What if England paid, or we are about, under $1 billion in debt? What if England decides that they're going to pay $1 billion in reparations? Let me say to the Mortleys argument, what is she going to do with it? You know, paying is one thing, but who receives this money? What is Sir Hillary's end game? He's pushing this thing for reparations. Let's say he gets it. Where does it go? Because your ancestors and mine, they all work for free. And I doubt very much if either of the two of these individuals got that reparations money, whether you or me are going to see any of it. So getting the money is one thing. But what are you going to do with it? If you viewed land as it should be viewed, as a going concern. I remember when Haywoods was sold back 20 years ago, 25 years ago. The Prime Minister was forced to sell Haywoods as an asset. You know, the private sector said, you keep the liability, and let's buy the asset. And he had to get rid of it because it was costing the government or whatever, so he sold the assets, and the government had to swallow the liabilities. I see land as a going concern. Anybody that buys that land, I'm very sorry, if you want to argue otherwise, that's fine. That's fine. Anybody that buys that land buys the going concern. With that going concern comes the liability of all the debt that was accrued over the years to all those people who have worked on that land and have not been paid. So you now own that land. That means you also own the debt. You see, this whole, if I were England, this is how you would see this argument. If I was the one you were asking to pay this thing to. If you buy land, you own the debt that goes with that land. I'm very sorry, because you adopted this capitalist approach to development. So you got to take on some of that guilt as well, too. I own land. But rather than be paying back the debt that comes with that going concern, which I consider to be land, you're paying a tax to the crown. You're paying land tax. You shouldn't be paying a land tax, which was only developed since the Queen had owned all the land back in those days, and the lords and stuff, and because you only borrowed that time, the land. I mean, land tax is immoral. I think everyone should agree with that. But instead of paying land tax, you should be paying a reparations charge, which is a simple thing. And that reparations wouldn't be going, or no Queen or no England paying, but you are paying the reparations because you own the land now. And that is your responsibility to pay. But what are you going to do with the money? You're not going to be paying that reparations to a government now, are you? No. You're not going to pay to Hillary, because that's for Hillary either. That reparation should be going to some fund that would ensure that no Barbadians would ever have to starve or go without cover again. I mean, something like that, where everybody, I mean, if you can leave your work tomorrow and I will not have to work again another day of your life, because that reparations will go to cover your for 300 years of working for free. You should have some fund that every Barbadian would be guaranteed a living, no matter whether they work or not. That's the way you see it. That's the only way a fund can possibly work for everyone. Anybody don't care too much about the color. But truth be told, you own the land, and he who owns the land should be paying that debt and not paying no tax. And if that is an argument that is held by the British or indeed the French, I don't think that Sir Hillary or the Prime Minister would have too much to argue against it. Because they're the ones who adopted this whole process of, you know, capitalism is a good thing of me moving forward. And, you know, yes, we have the socialist enterprise when it comes to policing and it comes to healthcare and that sort of thing. But, you know, yeah, you do this, but you also have to accept that with this activity, with this kind of development approach, you have to accept the blame as to what took place in the past.
So, all right. Thank you very much. Down to Brass Stocks. See how many more calls we can get in here before 2 o'clock. Welcome to the program.
Good afternoon, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good afternoon.
The case with Donville, a lady who, it happened to her children, her daughter and son went and studied in Cuba. The son did dentistry, the daughter did medicine, and they were not allowed to come back to practice. She just called me to remind me to phone this in. And they went to Donville Innes, and he was trying to get them accreditation. Well, the son is now living in Trinidad as a very successful dentist, and the daughter's in North America as a very successful doctor. And that was the story that Donville Innes was pushing.
Okay, ma'am. Thank you. Down to brass tacks. Hello? Welcome to the program. Is somebody there? Well, we also continue to look at the situation in Trinidad. You know, general elections have been called there for August. And there has also been a situation where we've seen some unrest on the streets last week in particular. I think there's some suggestion that there may well be something similar, some kind of roadblock today, but Trinidad's situation remains particularly interesting. One, you've had the emergence of these gangs in that country over the years. We, as fellow CARICOM states, have been worried about the rising crime, and we worry a lot about the movement of bad boys from one country to the next. Therefore, what we see in Trinidad would be of significance, would worry some in this country. The elections, well, we wait to see what is going to happen in this campaign and what will be the outcome of it all. So however you look at this Caribbean right now, we are all interwoven. You can't just be isolated. And unfortunately, there's been a greater degree of isolation and insularity within the Caribbean community in recent years than one would have expected. Let's take another call. Hello?
Hello, good afternoon.
Yes, hello.
Yes, good afternoon, David. I have a serious problem with the roadworks in Barbados right now.
Mm-hmm.
The government is giving people work cleaning the roads. The people cleaning the roads and leaving all the debris inside the road, heap up in blocks. If you go across Carmichael Road now, the guy's taking up the debris off the road and putting it on the concrete sidewalk, on the ridging at the side of the road. Now, if the rain falls, two drops of rain, that's going to fall back down in the road again. It is a load of junk. I mean, you cleaning the road and leaving the roads when the rain falls, this is the rainy season, it's going to wash back in the well and block up the well. That next year, now you are flooding again. The people that are doing the work, if there are open lots, I decide that nobody live on plantation and all, you can put it behind the little ridge in. But you can clean the road and then you can take the debris and leave it pile up in the road for the rain to wash it back in the well. I'll wash back across the road again.
How many years have you seen this going on?
Years. But it is foolishness. But no, at this time, with COVID and government having no money and all this kind of thing, you go, you put in work, so you will work 3 or 4 times on one job. Which don't make no sense. When you clean there, you will get someplace else to clean. It is pure madness.
You know what the man said in the paper this weekend? In many instances, the more things change, the more they remain the same. And that is one of those that remains the same.
But, David, if you go across Carmichael Road, you will laugh. Because they take up the thing off the road and put it on the concrete. You know, there's a concrete region at the side of the road.
Yeah.
But all the mold and thing that they take off the road, they put there on the concrete region for the wash back down again in the road again. Instead, they put it behind the little ridge, and they will put it on top of the ridge.
How does it make you feel? How does it make you feel?
That we're supposed to be 98% illiterate, but there's a lot of illiteracy, a lot more than that.
Yeah.
It's foolishness. I mean, it's the same way you can put it on top of the origin. We can put it behind the origin.
Mm-hmm.
So it will wash back in the road.
All right, well, I wait to hear from one of the ministries that's responsible for this. Exactly what are the difficulties that they face in this regard? Not everything has remained the same. I mean, for instance, we have already identified the improvement at the immigration department, which is significant. You know, many people feel that there has been that positive change. But in some areas, such as this one, we continue to have a problem. I haven't heard complaints recently about public servants who have to wait 3, 4, and 6 months for their pay because the process has been slow. So I want to know if we've also seen some improvement in that particular sphere. For now, though, I want to thank all of you for participating in today's edition of Down to Brass Tacks. And special thanks to Michelle Brathwaite, the technical operator and producer. I'm David Ellis. Do have a great afternoon.